Hey there, Pounders. This is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 38 of the Superfluous Poppycock podcast. I'm here with my good friend Seth Warren, and we are ready to talk about the most important, least important thing in the NBA season. Shall we lead straight off into the media award known as the most valuable player?
You know, and first off, I'll apologize for you that we were absentee last week, and we'll just kind of leave it at that. But we missed, and you know my frustration, because
it's a lot easier to do a podcast when you have a voice. That's all I'm saying.
It is, and I understand that, and we don't hold it well. Most of us won't hold that against you. however, we picked a terrible week to take off, because there were so many things, and even, you know, we complain a lot. Gosh, being a Spurs fan, there's it's kind of like a slow news day often, because there's not a lot of really juicy, high-profile, sexy stories. This last week was full of sexy Spurs stories, and we didn't quite bring them out. Even though that conversation has been beaten to death,
How can it be beaten to death when there's still weeks to go through the end of the regular season, and then there's weeks to recap the entire regular season, and then you go into the playoffs, and it's not until the beginning of the second round that they actually announce the thing, or is it sure. A different date this time?
No, it should be about the same time period. What I mean beat to death is the sudden emergence of Kawhi Leonard and oh my goodness.
Suddenly we have to take him seriously, right? Is that it?
And I just laugh because I'm going, you know, the guy's eighth in scoring, I think, as of today. You don't get to eighth by basically averaging 10 a game and then having one or two 200-point games. So he's been here the entire time. Everyone's just kind of overlooked him the entire time, which is, you know, obviously typical Spurs. But the hottest thing in sports media right now is these articles about, you know, why Kawhi deserves the MVP. And I kind of think you and I deserve, I guess, an opportunity to reflect on that and to make that same case.
I'm ready. I'm ready. Or actually, I'm ready to listen to you go off.
Well, and that's it, you know, my frustration with us missing some time, because I had so much that I just spewed out volcanically, and then it seems like so many articles came out saying the same thing. But I want to come out and say initially, you know, a lot of people, I got a kid going through the Avengers right now, and it's kind of fun to relive that phase and to deal with superheroes and to kind of be a kid again. And I think after really pondering this subject matter specifically, I got to preface everything by saying, if I were a superhero, a real-life superhero, my gift would not be super strength or invisibility or anything like that. It would be objectivity.
And that is a superpower.
It is a superpower. And so in going along with that and in using my super gift, my super skill, my superpower of objectivity, I want to start by saying I know this is an official Spurs podcast. This is, we're diehard Spurs fans, and make no bones about that. However, I want to be, for the next 5-10 minutes, I want to be completely objective and nothing more than just a basketball fan. I'm not a guy who genuinely wants to name his next child Kawhi. I'm not a guy who is currently wearing Spurs gear. I'm not a guy who watches Spurs games. I'm just a basketball fan.
Okay.
I want to start with this Kawhi Leonard as MVP conversation. Basically, you know, by saying, of course, he should be an MVP candidate. And I want to kind of lay out a little bit of, you know, his argument. We all know his argument. We all know his pros. We know, you know, he's an elite offensive player. He's 7th, 8th in scoring, ahead of LeBron, Curry, Kyrie, Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. He's a great scorer this year. We know he's, you know, back-to-back defensive player of the year. He's NBA Finals MVP. We know his defensive rating, although it's gone up a bit, is still incredible at just hovering right about 104. His net rating of +9 is really good. Both are tops among all MVP candidates. We know all of these things. Really, what I want to focus on is why he specifically deserves it. I get the fact that Russell is sexy. I get the fact that what he's doing is groundbreaking and it's incredible and it's amazing and it should capture our attention in every way because it's only been done once. One thing that the media keeps missing, and I've seen it in little snippets here and there, it was done once. Oscar Robertson.
Yeah.
1961. We've all heard that. He didn't win the MVP.
He didn't. He was third, right? I think he was third in voting.
Fourth
in voting.
And that's... Well, he was either third or fourth. Regardless, he wasn't in the top one, and is that what they call
the winner?
Exactly.
Okay.
So there's precedent for this. In the last 20 to 30 years, there's also a precedent that the MVP winner has to be in the top four finishing teams. It's kind of standard.
I thought it was in the top three, way up there.
You may be an MVP for your team, but you can't really make the case that you're an MVP, a true league MVP, without finishing the top three or four, because truthfully, every team has an MVP. Another thing that's kind of heavy on my mind that I've been hearing so much of, because it really, everybody say, oh, it's coming down to Harden. It's coming down to Harden or Westbrook. That's got to be it. And you got to give it to Westbrook.
Because that's been the story for weeks. Yeah.
Oh, it has pretty much the whole season. If Westbrook averages a triple-double, if it ends up happening, you got to give it to Westbrook. My contention for the last several months, I love that he's averaging a triple-double. And on any given year, let me say this. If a first place or a second place or a third place team had a guy averaging a triple-double, it would be a no-brainer. But the fact that we're even discussing this and what he's doing is so monumental and historic and revolutionary ought to answer any dispute as to whether Russell is the MVP. Pure and simple, you don't get to be MVP by taking a lottery team and converting them to the seventh place team in the West. That doesn't make you an MVP. Another thing that bothers me about Russell that I want to get off my chest that we hear constantly, well, Russell's doing it though, and he's got so little around him and he's doing it. This argument is about to make me pull what remaining hair I have left out of my head.
I didn't know he had left.
I don't understand he's not doing it with very much. I get it. KD is gone. Yes. One of the best players of all time is no longer on his team. But the rest of the guys on his team, it's not a slouch team. And we didn't think that, you know, this new, I guess, narrative that he's got a whole bunch of scrubs and he's just carrying them to victory is beset by the fact that, you know, Victor Oladipo is a really good player, a borderline all-star. We looked at him that way all the way up until about a month ago, in which it helped the narrative to say he was playing with a bunch of stiffs. Steven Adams is a guy that nearly any team in the league would trade their big man for. He's a great big man. You know, now they got Taj Gibson, they got McDermott. Both of those guys bring definite roles to that team and bring things to that team that are Danny Green-like. Enes Kanter. I mean, there's a reason the guy got a massive contract, and it wasn't simply just overpayment, even though that was most of it. The guy is an offensive player. He's a great offensive big man. So there are players around Russell. Let's scrap this argument that Russell is leading a team of scrubs, because I don't believe Kawhi is leading a team of scrubs, but they're not far off. I mean, cast away Jonathan Simmons, cast away Patty Mills, cast away Danny Green, you know, 84-year-old Pau Gasol. There's plenty of arguments you can make on Kawhi's side as well for leading a team of non-superstars. And as hard as we've been on LaMarcus, needing to be stepping into that second gunner or that second scorer position and to solidify that with consistency, he has not done it. So technically, the Spurs are really a one-star team and have been for the majority of this year. I just think it's time that we analyze Russell Westbrook and we say, all of these things are cons. What he's doing is great, no doubt about it. Is it MVP deserving? No. It's MVP worthy, but it's not MVP deserving. Do you agree?
I agree with you. It's first of all, his team is too far out of the championship picture, I think. The media really likes to highlight guys that are in that have their teams in the championship hunt. And there is this concept of value. And I think that you can say that a player brings value when they can coexist with their teammates well enough to the point where they don't run off to super teams to leave them.
Right.
So that's, again, that is, it's amazing what Russell's doing. I think he's played angry far, far longer and more consistently than I thought he could. He hasn't burned out. He hasn't worn out, which is amazing with the usage that he's carrying for that team. I'm hats off to him, absolutely. But I don't think I'm to the point where I would put him there as the MVP myself, no matter how impressive the triple-double is, because that's just a flat stats rating. And
right.
I think a number of different things eliminate him, among which the ones that you listed, and the fact that he wasn't able to bring the biggest value, which I think would have been being able to play with Kevin to the point where he stayed.
Right. Well, Westbrook's almost also on pace for nearly 450 turnovers this season, which would break the NBA record for most turnovers in a season set by James Harden last year at 374. So the turnovers, to me, are and will, believe me, a lot of guys listen to this right now going, oh, wait, no, I know. We're getting to the bearded one. Don't worry. 450 turnovers this season. I mean, it's 75 more turnovers, more than 75 turnovers above the NBA record. I mean, and I'm not asking for a perfect game. I know that Russell fans are going, yeah, but look at all the other stuff he gives you. I just feel like with Russell, and I value the triple-double as an NBA purist, but it goes back to the quote that you and I just espouse ad nauseum of somebody has to score. And I don't believe that phenomenon is what we're seeing with Russell. I believe he's a true superstar. I've always liked Westbrook. But to a degree, I think you have to somewhat discount some of those stats, at least diminish them somewhat by the fact that where else is their offense really going to come from?
Well, I wouldn't say that you have to discount them, but I would definitely say that you need to put them in context. And that's a better way to say it.
That's
what this entire thing is about. It's like we're talking about great players. We're talking about the best of the best this season.
Right.
You can't just glance at one stat because then you would ignore others that favor one of the other guys, right?
Right.
The point is you have to bring the context. And
right.
and honestly, when you look at the turnover numbers and the rest of them, no, I'm with you. I wouldn't say that it's Russ.
Well, then let's tackle our Houston Rocket friend James Harden. I like what James is doing. James is playing great. His scoring is unbelievable. He's brought his assists up in the Mike D'Antoni system. The assists alone that Harden has implemented into his game and transitioned his game into I don't want to go so far as to say team first, but he has integrated himself as a player that gets other players involved.
When you're not a me first player, when you're getting as many assists, when you're making other players around you better, if that's not being team first, what is it?
Right. And I don't know if I'm ready to go so far as to say he's not any longer a me first player. He's just a me mostly not first player. That's that's probably the best way to classify him now. Mostly not first me.
That's the left-handiest compliment I've heard all week.
I'm not willing to call him a team player at this point, but he's playing well. He's having a career year. You know, you could almost argue he had a better year last year, but he's having a very good year. He's carrying Houston along, and oh, they got some scrubs on that team. No, they don't. It's the same exact same argument that you're looking at with the Thunder, with the Spurs. They've got individually good identity players on that team that fit together. Now, are any of those other guys going to carry a team on any of those three teams? Absolutely not. But it's, I can give Harden props all day. Where Harden loses me is, again, the turnovers. He has already, now I said Westbrook is on pace for 450 turnovers. Harden already broke his own record. I don't even know what turnovers he's sitting on as of this broadcast, but last year he set the most turnover in a season mark with 374. He broke that about a week and a half ago.
So when you turn over the ball, you're giving it to the other team. When you give it to their team, you can't score, right? Because they have it.
Generally, that's kind of okay. how that works.
Yeah, yes.
Generally,
bad.
When you turn over the ball, it doesn't help your own team. Yeah. And that's a big deal. Again, I know the argument that a lot of Rockets fans are going to make is, well, you know, he brings so much other stuff to the game. His usage rate is so high. You know, those turnovers are kind of something you live with and you expect that. Not if you're a fan of Kawhi, which we'll transition into. But the turnovers are a big deal to me because regardless of usage rate, if your turnovers are that abysmally high, it's such a negative impact on your own team. Even if the good you provide is beneficial and is getting you guys somewhere, imagine what more you could be doing if you were more disciplined in your play. That's not to say anything about the fact that he's a completely one-dimensional player. At least Russell, most of the time, plays defense or attempts to play defense.
Well, Russell plays James crazy makes, hard defense.
He does.
He's and not always James efficient makes, in his defense, but he plays. He
well,
tries.
He puts forth effort,
yes.
Which, again, Harden, crickets. There's no effort there. And I would transition that point into the same point that we always talk about with LeBron. I get the fact that as long as LeBron James is alive and he has a jersey on, we can make the argument that he's the league MVP because he's the best player on the planet. How do you make that argument? Because it's not necessarily through scoring. He typically does not lead the league in scoring. Why do we make the argument that LeBron is the best player? That wasn't rhetorical, by the way.
Wow, that sounded rhetorical. He brings so much to his team. There's the statistical case that you can make for him, where all of the points is plus minus what happens to the team when he's off the court, what happens to his team
net.
When he rests the game, his net rating, yeah. All of that stuff. I mean, they're stupendous. But I think the biggest thing that we're going to rely on. In this podcast, specifically as we talk about the MVP race, it's not a race, right? I mean, at the end of the season, the media gets together and they vote. There's no race. Right. The guys play as good as they can, and then people tell stories about them to justify to themselves their vote, vote which you and I don't have at all. But we've been talking about context before, and I love that term. Especially when we come to talk about James, because it's not his best season, in the same way that it's ridiculous to see some of the seasons that Michael Jordan was not voted as the MVP, and you look at his numbers and the numbers of the person whoever beat him that year, and it's obvious that the media that year had just decided, we're tired of voting for Michael, we want somebody else in here. And right. that's the phase. I mean, like, you go back and you look at those, and sometimes it's almost embarrassing, where you're like, you had Michael freaking Jordan, and you did look at the numbers, look at the season that he put up, and you're not voting for him. And that's where we are, I think, at this point, to be able to be honest with you. I mean, the media has decided right. he's just going to have to be stupendous by his standards in order to be voted in, and he's not having that year.
Well, and I would, on a superficial and on a very simplistic level, I would sum up everything you said into the point I'm trying to make is the reason we look at LeBron as so typically an MVP candidate is because he's well-rounded. Mm. He's a great defensive player and a great offensive player while simultaneously contributing an enormous amount to whichever team he happens to be playing for that year. He's a well-rounded.
You mean the team that's going to going to represent the Eastern East. Conference in the finals?
Absolutely. That's his team.
How many straight seasons is that now?
That's exactly what I'm trying to say, is the well-rounded aspect is what makes LeBron James LeBron James. That's what makes him so dynamic in so many ways. It's what makes the mythical figure that we've all created of Michael Jordan, it's what makes him into Michael Jordan, the fact that he's well-rounded. We don't canonize guys who are one-dimensional on one side of the game. Because of that, why should a guy like James Harden, I don't care if he averages 40 a game, why should he be in the conversation for an MVP?
Well, because it's easier to judge offense for a single player over defense. And actually, there's a statistical case to be made that offense is more important than defense, when you consider a single player, defense is a scheme. Defense is a group of guys. It's a scheme. Sure. It's a group. It's a team effort. And so if you put in some effort on defense, it's going to make your case easier to be made, but you don't have to show yourself as valuable. Right. In the past, you haven't needed to show yourself as valuable. Again, MVP, V being value. You don't have to show yourself as valuable on defense as offense in order to be voted MVP.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just believe if you're that singular and you're that one-dimensional, I don't believe that you're a legitimate MVP candidate, and especially in a year in which we've got so many strong. If I told you we had a guy that was averaging a triple-double, first time it's ever been done since 1961, you'd throw off the other guy who didn't play a lick of defense. So, again, and I don't mean to attack these guys personally. I guess I'm just more or less attacking the sports media that's just now going, oh, what's his name? Who's that Spurs guy that had a really good game versus Houston for the last minute that I saw on SportsCenter? I guess I'm frustrated with that argument because, again, there's so much that's pushing Kawhi. I mean, you know what I felt like watching the Houston game a week or two ago? Is you know how when Neo finally learns how to bend the Matrix in the movie?
At the end, right.
Yes, when he finally figures, I'm the one. And he makes the transition. That moment of realization that he can do anything now is almost exactly what Kawhi is going through this season. It's an offensive awakening. He's just bending the friggin' matrix at this point. And to see how critical to see his net rating, his defensive rating, both tops among all the guys that I've just named, granted his three-point shooting is a bit down, but it's still hovering near 40%. You're still talking 38%. You can't leave him alone. His turnovers went up, but they went up from 1.5 from last season to 2. He's not setting any turnover records, not to mention the fact, and I'll have to verify this stat, I think it's still true as of today. I think we're approaching in the next week or so maybe a shift, but in my understanding as of today, Kawhi Leonard, and this still blows my mind, Kawhi Leonard has more steals than personal fouls over his entire career.
For his career.
Just think about that for a moment. You get, five fouls in a game? 6 fouls? You're gonna claim that? I get the fact that he's not getting 5-6 steals a game, but what that speaks to is the immense amount of discipline as a professional basketball player that Kawhi Leonard demonstrates. None of these other guys can show that discipline.
Well, there's two parts of discipline, and the first is how low his turnovers are and how low his turnover rate is, and then the second is his ability to get steals while not fouling. Yeah, both
absolutely.
Of those speak to discipline.
Yeah, and let me make one last point, begging for the league and other fan bases and you know the sports media world to really grasp onto, because this is another point that really goes understated and doesn't get enough love. You can't say this about LeBron, because typically they put LeBron into this role, but Westbrook and Harden, you can definitely not say this about. One thing that I appreciate perhaps more than anything else about Kawhi Leonard, it goes understated. He draws the other team's defensive assignment that is their – he draws the toughest assignment, no matter who we're playing. He can play anything between a 1 and a 5. We don't want to leave him at a 5, obviously, for long, depending on this. We're not going to put him up against Mark Gasol all game. But in spurts, he draws Mark Gasol and can play Mark Gasol's. He draws a DeAndre Jordan and can play a DeAndre Jordan. Kawhi is playing the toughest 1, the toughest 2, the toughest 3, the toughest 4, and the toughest 5 any other team has to throw. We play the Warriors, he's going to switch off any of their big 3 Splash Brothers. If we play the Cavs, he's going to pretty much camp out on LeBron. If we play the Clippers, he's going to rotate Chris Paul and Blake Griffin quite a bit. I mean, this is a guy who is in the top 8 in scoring, arguably the defensive player of the year again, all of these things that I've just made the case on, and he's doing it working harder than nearly anybody else on the floor every single game.
It's impressive. I wouldn't say that he was going to guard many fives. So that's
no,
the one.
He's not going to stay on the fives, but he's a guy that you can at least have a rotation in which he shifts onto a five, mm-hmm. and you don't have a coronary when you see it happen. When I see Patty Mills shift onto DeAndre Jordan, I basically turn the channel as quickly as I can. But if Kawhi shifts onto a five momentarily, it's not the end of the world. He can handle a five. But the fact is, a guy that's that versatile, that every given night draws the toughest defensive assignment on the floor and does it successfully, all while putting up these points, all while his efficiency is high, his net rating is high, I guess that's why I'm a little wordy today in the current stream of news of, you know, Kawhi, he's in the hunt. He's in the conversation. I think I wrote to you a week ago and said, you know, we need to post an article that says Kawhi is not in the MVP conversation. Everyone listen to me. He is absolutely not in the MVP conversation. He is the MVP conversation. And that's exactly what we should be pushing. We should be pushing it on PTR. You know, I the team's never going to sell it because we're not a part of that organization that's going to go out and pimp out our guys. But we need to be pushing this narrative so that it grows and gains more speed, because I'd love to see him win the award. It's not that it's critically important to me. It's that he deserves it. From what he's put in this year, he absolutely deserves that kind of national recognition.
Well, he's having a phenomenal year, obviously, and where he was at the beginning of the season and Tony Parker being out, and he had some really big games, and then Tony came back and LaMarcus played well for a while, and he just kind of sat back and was happy to do his work on the defensive end, and then come in and log his 18 to 22 and be fine. And then he's just started this onslaught. It's just been amazing to watch. It's so impressive. I believe I said earlier in the year, the first time anybody started talking about MVP at all, I guess early with the buzz. And the main thing that I've been saying this whole time is that it's so much about storytelling. It's so much about what you can, about the narrative, about what you can actually feel viscerally as you talk about someone, and that's got just media written all over it. It's just so obvious that it can't just be about numbers, because it's this subjective measure, because it's this idea of value, because there are all of these caveats that in qualifications. And exemptions that you put on, well, you know, yeah, sure, he's having a great year, but his team's not playing well. It just turns into this little, you know, like touchy-feely kind of thing.
Yeah. The other point, I mean, and you're touching on the narrative that is Russell winning the MVP, and I get it. Like I said, it's a sexy story. It's beautiful. It's a great story. But another fact that I want to mention about Russell, and I'd love to do some, I don't have my, I need to get with research and, you know, make sure we have this information.
We'll go to the guys in the truck and see what they tell us.
Exactly. Yeah, we're having some technical issues now, so I don't have this in front of me. But I would love for someone to go back and look. When's the last time a league MVP award was awarded to a player who didn't even start in his conference's all-star team? And granted, that was kind of a sham. We get that. But I'd just be curious, the last MVP who didn't start in that year's all-star game. I'd be very curious to see who that was.
We'll ask our question and take the answer off the line. How about that?
Yeah, we'll take it off air. That's right. That's right.
Well, I think the whole Kawhi belongs in the conversation. I think guys convincing themselves or coming to the party late, whichever way you want to think about it, it reminds me of the way that buddies of mine would talk themselves into asking out a girl that they suddenly heard liked them. You know, right. It's like someone that they wouldn't give the time of day to, and then so and so told so and so that they overheard somebody else mention that maybe that girl liked him, and then suddenly it's like, well, she's the conversation. I mean, like, that whole mental that whole mental traversing that those kinds of topics. It seems like the exact same kind of thing when guys start convincing themselves.
After
the Rockets game, after you've got this nice little 7-second little Vine-worthy moment of the three on one end and the block on the other end, and now he's ready to be talked about. It's just, I mean, it's just, it's simplistic. It's obvious. It's annoying is what it is. But that's the way that the MVP race goes.
And I think probably this all boils down to my biggest frustration being, hey guys, welcome to the party. You know, I appreciate that you saw the last, 20 seconds of the Houston game. And like you said, that was the Vine moment that captured everybody, because all of these candidates need kind of a Vine moment. And that was the moment that put Kawhi on everybody's radar. But I resent that, because I've been watching every second of what he's done this year. And it's just been breathtaking how he – you think of the Spurs, and I would even – you know, again, this is where my superhero power of objectivity is really tested, as though there's kryptonite nearby. I think about Houston, no Harden. I think about Thunder, no Westbrook. And I think, and again, this is obviously all speculation. I think about Spurs, no Kawhi. And even though you've got some bigger marquee names on the Spurs, I truthfully believe that we would be somewhere between 8 and 10 in the league without Kawhi, maybe even 8 and 12.
Spurs without Kawhi, much better team than Thunder without Russ, though. You got to admit that.
Yeah, I do believe, because Victor Oladipo's having to carry way too much beyond his ability at that point. So I think you're right, but it's a the reason why I hesitate is because, what do you go from 7 to 11? I mean, I'm talking about the downfall, the slide. You're not going from 7 to 14.
You don't think Pop can take a Kawhi-less team to the playoffs?
Possibly. In 8th. In 8th, and no better than 8th.
With a healthy Parker, yes. But how long has it been since he's played now? Yeah, I mean, he's not had a healthy Parker this
with
season.
With George Gervin and Robinson on the floor at the same time. I mean, we don't have a healthy Parker. That's the point. And those are the conditions you have to judge Kawhi with. You don't have a healthy Parker. You don't have a healthy and fully functional, at least based on our assessment for the last year, of LaMarcus. You've got Powell at 36. You've got Manu on the downside of his career, even though I think he's playing phenomenally. You've got a lot of inconsistency in the backcourt. I mean, I'm not going to say they're a worse team, but they're a worse team in my mind. I think Russell's Thunder dropped from 7 to maybe 10, maybe 11, and I think the Spurs dropped from 1 or 2. And I say one or two because we're flip-flopping every 10 minutes these days with Golden State. We fall from one or two to potentially 8 or 9, more than likely. And that's a far bigger drop. Now, Harden's Rockets gets a little interesting because, you know, I think they very likely drop pretty good too. But they drop from, what, you know, 3 to maybe 11. It's tough because it's all speculation, and you don't know who's, you know, maybe Trevor Ariza pulls out a Hall of Fame performance and has this incredible year. Maybe Danny Green reverts back to, you know, his finals performance for an entire season. But as it is right now, and again, objectivity in question when I say this, I think Kawhi is the more valuable person to his team in if he weren't there or being there or being not there, rather. But again, like I said, I'm stumbling because the Thunder don't have that many wins. I mean, Westbrook, essentially, if you look at the analytics, Westbrook has to have a triple-double, essentially, for the Thunder to win. Mm. He's got 33 triple-doubles, and they've got like 38 wins?
There's a very high correlation between his triple-doubles and their win. It's not that hard for him to get triple-doubles the way he's playing and with the way that team's up and with the way that he's pursuing rebounds. You know, he's got an insanely high number of rebounds off of free throws. I mean, a guy goes for boards all the time, even when, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot to go for a board. Like, free throws are the easiest time to get them. So it's just, you know, he's playing so well. But I think that is that all the case that you've got to make?
Yeah, I don't, you know, if you don't, I think at this point in time, if you don't get it, if you don't agree on Kawhi, if you don't see all of these things on Kawhi Leonard, you're watching a different game. Good luck to you. It's a game that I don't any longer know or love if we can't at least acknowledge that these are inarguable points about Kawhi Leonard. I wish him the best. It's homecoming queen. I'm not hung up on the award. I think it's predominantly it's rigged, but at the same time, I'd love to see Kawhi get it because he deserves it.
Because he deserves to be homecoming queen because he's so pretty.
Yes, he's gorgeous.
Got it. I got it. Shifting gears a little bit here, there's less than a month left in the NBA regular season now.
Yeah.
And we've got a game coming up. The Spurs have a game against Memphis. Begins a back-to-back on Saturday. And starting from that date, there's a game every other day, if not to get 2 days in a row a couple of times. And this schedule gets pretty brutal. In fact, that Fogafini, yeah. that group of four games and five nights from April the 4th to the 8th is brutal.
It's
tough because it's so deep into the season, not necessarily that all four teams are brutal, but you've got the Grizzlies who always come to play against the Spurs, yeah. And tough team and beat them up. You got the Lakers in town. Both of those are in San Antonio. Go to Dallas. That's Tuesday, Wednesday. Go to Dallas on Friday, and then get the Clippers in San Antonio. And you know how I feel about the Clippers and how they're Spurs kryptonite at this point. And but that's at the end of 3 weeks worth of game on, game off, game day, day off, without two in a row. So it's serious time, and this is
it goes back to exactly why you and I have talked about it for a little while, that it was really a hubris moment. It was really a pat on the back moment when we knocked down that number one seed, and even though, you know, statistically we were tied, we had the tiebreaker, so we had the number one seed, howbeit for 5 minutes we had the number one seed. It was a validating moment to go, man, we added seven brand new faces, we lost Tim Duncan, they added Kevin Durant, and we got the one seed right now. So that moment was cool, and we go back to you and I talking about how we'd rather have the two anyway, but even at that moment, we were kind of going, let's not get used to this, because Golden State has an absolute cupcake schedule from here on out, and we've got a pretty strong little gauntlet to go through. So I don't anticipate we're going to retain that one seed, and I'm fine with that. I would almost rather, you know, pull the Golden State approach and take some games off than really fight for the one, to be honest.
I'm starting to drift on that. I'm starting to feel like that a sub 500 team in the first round would be mighty, mighty tasty. As long as the Clippers don't slip to seven. And right now they're two games ahead of the Grizzlies. And frankly, Clippers, Thunder, Grizzlies, they could all wind up tied for the record. And who knows where the tiebreaker goes at that point. I just don't want to have anything to do with a series against Los Angeles in the first seed. I think a lot of this has to do, there was a bunch of talk after you and I said you don't even want the one seed. And a lot of it was pretty compelling. And home court is huge, and you want to have the best chance at taking us every series that you're in. At this point, I want the team to do as well as they possibly can, but you know, there's only a certain percentage of chance that I can give to them in a series against the Warriors. I just want them to make it to the Western Conference Finals and then roll the dice and see where it goes. And I think the best chance of getting to the Western Conference Finals is a postseason when they don't have to play against LA. Mm-hmm. But obviously the Warriors are the biggest threat to them, and it would just be so sweet to not just have it for 5 minutes but actually finish out the season with the Golden Boys, with the super team, with the team that can't be beat, not having the number one seed, and the Spurs who lost Duncan, and people were thinking middle of the pack, or even, I mean, no one had this called this. No one saw this coming. It's just, it'd be terrific.
No, I share that. I mean, I get that completely. I don't quite feel the same level of terror about the Clippers that you do. I get where you're coming from, and I don't like it. But I don't know that it would be as bad of a matchup for us as we originally speculated. I definitely don't agree with you that it would be nice to have a sub-500 team. I don't want a sub-500. I want a team, and if you look at our track record, and again, this was, you know, in the Duncan era, so weigh this with a grain of salt. Not that he impacted this, but it's just a different era and different team. We typically go through the playoffs a lot better when we maintain a challenge. Anytime, you know, the times in the past in which we've had sub-500 teams or we've had weaker opponents in the first round, we've ended the season strong, dropped down to play a weaker opponent, and then had to rise up again in subsequent rounds, and it was difficult for us to regain rhythm and rise back up again, and that's what I don't want. I mean, our team is young enough while also being mature and experienced enough. I think we'd be fine if we played a stronger opponent in the first round. It can only help us going further. And if we're not going to beat teams like the Clippers or Memphis, you know, at a certain point you're going to play them anyway. Might as well play them earlier than later and get a jump start on that vacation.
Yeah, I just see the difference between a fresh LA early and one that gets beat up. And I just see that team, they've never made it past the second round for, a series of very good reasons. And and just those guys have not shown the ability to stay healthy as the postseason goes on. And
assuming they fall to seven. If they fell to seven, then yeah, let's fight for that one. Let's avoid the Clippers in round one. But if we, you know, this whole mantra of, well, let's avoid the Clippers, but we also
it's all about avoiding a fresh Clippers team.
Yeah,
a team with their big guys that have missed huge stretches of the season, haven't had to go through 82 games, and have been able to stay fresh. I still don't believe that Chris Paul, his body is capable of sustaining full effort. Again, you can coast through a lot of regular season games, play hard for a stretch, and win them. But a postseason game it means that every play, everybody's given their all, and Chris Paul's body just hasn't shown that it can handle that. And that's why I think in the second round or the third round, it's an entirely different thing. Clippers in the first round, like a couple years back, you know, Spurs kryptonite. But either way, the team has just played phenomenally well this season. The Portland loss notwithstanding,
that was frustrating.
I think it's actually time for us to take a look at whether or not there's any unnecessary foolishness for us to wrap up the show with. What do you got?
How much time do we have? This is exactly why you shouldn't deny me, because I like to apologize if I've rambled and if I ranted. I don't really care. I don't know that I care, but being as I did, I guess I should apologize for that. But that's part of the downside of if you just keep me cooped up for 2 weeks without a podcast. I got another for you.
Let's have it.
We're probably going to have to transition this into another podcast, but I don't know about you. I'm still waiting. I've turned blue in the face because I've been holding my breath this entire time. I'm waiting on the league to announce a $250,000 fine to the Golden State Warriors for last-minute benching their superstars for a nationally televised major marketed game.
Did I miss that? I think you're also waiting for Stern to return and replace Silver as the commissioner, because we've got an entirely different sheriff in town years ago.
In other words, that ruling, because I'm still pissed about that. I'm still bitter about that Miami game, if you can't tell. In other words, that ruling was based completely on emotion. completely on perspective and emotion and not on rule of law in any way, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was, and you see the difference between the number of back to backs, the number of four games and five nights.
I don't care. Like I don't even. No. Don't
that
make
that changed.
Argument. Don't make what that I'm Golden is, State argument. Oh, we're
I'm not making a. I'm not making a Golden State argument. Okay. What I'm saying is that Silver came in to the benefit of the teams, in support of player health, and ended the near embargo that TNT had on a couple of weeks a night where you only have two games a night. And he says you don't get exclusivity anymore. There's going to be other games that night, and kept it from being a situation where you had to play so many games back-to-back and had so many just really, really, really tough stretches with all the back-to-backs, with all the four games and five nights, right? Back-to-back game off. I'm sorry, day off, back-to-back again. That was all because TNT and ESPN had those exclusive nights. Now they don't have that anymore. There's other games in the night, and that's all because of Silver. So I'm pro-Silver at this point.
I'm 100% with you. I'm pro-Silver. I've said that before. I think Adam Silver is arguably the best commissioner in all four professional American sports at this point in time. However, I'm also pro-consistency. I'm pro character. I'm pro consistency of character. I think even if you're Silver and you disagree with what Stern did, in the interest of consistency,
you still want to see him do it.
I still want to see him do it. In the interest of, if anything, send a message to Kerr. We don't play this way. This is not what we do. You just screwed over Disney, and that's a bad deal, Steve. So here's a fine. Because it just is a bad look. It's really, really bad look to fine Pop in the front office $250,000 for resting guys who, and I'm going to argue this as a Spurs fan, resting guys who are nowhere near the superstar caliber of marketing draw that Golden State's guys were. I mean, at this point, you're resting. What did we rest? Danny Green, Timmy, Manu, and Tony?
It was... Yeah, those four guys, the big three in green.
Danny's a guy, and I love Danny, and he was having that was the highlight of his career at that point in time. I get that, but he's a guy who'd been cut multiple times from multiple teams. This is a cast-off guy. Manu, Tony, and Tim are the big three, but they're the big three from the turn of the decade. Like, these are older guys on the downside of their career. You got the face of the league in KD, Curry, you know, Thompson, and Iguodala. I mean, that's four of your five all-stars right there.
Draymond
Green,
too.
At the last minute, that you've just decided, nope, I'm not going to play these guys. And it just disgusts me, again, as the league. I mean, it's Kerr can do that all day long. I think it's – I'm not going to buy this BS of its rest, because they didn't play for another 3 days, and the game they did play was Philly at home. So the rest argument doesn't play. That may be for, you know, lesser fans, but I'm not buying into the whole rest thing and they needed rest. It wasn't specifically that when you're fighting for playoff positioning. It was analytics, and it was a CIA Pop kind of move. And that's fine. I respect that. He has that right. But the league needs to be credible and consistent.
So you argued against the fine 5 years ago, but since it happened, you won it again.
If I argued against the fine because I think it's too much oversight, and I think it's too much socialism in a league that should be independently run, almost as a republic, by coaches independently operating their teams on their own, as a representative of the people, if you will. So I thought it was way too much oversight by the league. However, once it came down and we reached the point of going, okay, it is what it is, at that point I said, all right, from this point forward, you damn well better bet if LeBron James sits down with Kyrie Irving, with Kevin Love, I'm going to be the first guy that comes out screaming. And sure enough, Golden State pulled this, and I thought, okay, well, it would be interesting to see how the league handles this. Absolute silence. So that's my superfluous poppycock, is being quite frustrated within the last 2 weeks that the league has just chosen to cower.
Fair enough, Seth. And everybody, that'll do it for this episode. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.